Let's go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. We welcome in the always dangerous one, Daryl Ryder, who joins us on the hotline, Browns beat reporter for 92.3 The Fan and 92.3TheFan.com simultaneously. Daryl, hello.
It's always a pleasure to join the Ken Carmen Show with Freddie Kitchens.
It's nice to have Freddie come
shots
in once in a while.
Fired at Anthony Lyman.
Yeah, what the
he
hell,
didn't
Darryl?
Even mention him.
Is
what
this is over Josh
problem?
McDaniels?
Really? Really, you're doing this again? By
yes,
the way,
I am.
With Josh McDaniels, who's a Canton guy, by
He's
the way,
guy.
We got a guy from Gadsden, Alabama, who's the head coach of the Browns willing to call in. Do you think there's a chance in hell Josh McDaniels would have called into a radio Wait. Show, even though he's from here?
I will tell you, I know for a fact there have been some summers that he has been in town and he has heard this show. Because it's been relayed to me.
Wait, with you and me?
I'm not even kidding.
Wait. Daryl, stand by.
Standing by.
What's he saying?
He's listened to the show. He's definitely somebody who's heard Sports Talk Radio in Cleveland and has heard this show.
I've heard the show. Yes, what do you think? That's like Mitch Hedberg. Hey, I saw you on TV last night. I saw you at the airport. There's nothing that says whether he thought it was good or bad. What did he say?
I don't know. I just know that he's heard it and he's listened.
Because if you try to sit there and soften me up and say that he liked it, doesn't matter. I still didn't want him to be the head coach of the Browns. All right, Daryl. We're just loving life right now with Freddie Kitchens here. Do you think that this is the most pressure on a Browns football team since 99? And if so, could you go back even further and say that there was another time where this is the most pressure since blank year for the Cleveland Browns in their team's history?
Definitely since 99. I mean, it'll be right there with the 2008 team. As far as in their history goes, I don't know. I'd probably say 65. There was a lot of pressure coming off the championship in 64 to repeat. But it's up there. No question about it. I mean, even the, you know, the teams in the 80s coming off the disappointments in the AFC championship games the following years there and being expected to take that next step and ultimately win that game to get to the Super Bowl. But there is no question about it, a tremendous amount of pressure on this football team as they enter the 2019 season because they won't be able to sneak up on anybody and they're going to get treated with the same level of respect as the rest of the National Football League is, and that's something I don't think that the Browns are going to be used to dealing with.
Well, then let me ask you, because we put it out there. I started off the show. Well, I didn't start off the show, but I started off at 7 and said, it's got to be playoffs now. My expectations, my threshold is playoffs. You don't sound as optimistic in that way. What do you think? What is your line for success for the 2019 Browns now?
10 wins in the wild card at worst. I mean, I think that that's a reasonable expectation.
Wow, that is nice. I like that.
I mean, is it going to happen? I don't know. You know, there are a couple factors. I mean, nothing is guaranteed, but I look at what they were able to do this past season, 7-8-1. You can make an argument, you know, three or four games go their way. They could have won 10, 11 games this past season. So I think it's a reasonable bar to be set. You know, they entered last season, with the bar being set, it just win a game. Now it's, can you win 10 games? Can you get at least a wild card berth so you're playing football in January for the first time in, 16, 17 years? So that's a reasonable bar. But, again, what the Browns have going for them is on paper, the schedule appears to be a little easier than last year as far as the level of competition. But the league does vary year to year, and also you're now going to be a marked team. You're not sneaking up on everyone, and you certainly are going to get a premium effort, especially from your opposition within your own division.
Daryl Ryder, join us on the hotline. What's going to be the biggest challenge for Freddie as he has now taken over this job? He's the head coach. All the jokes, all that stuff's probably going to subside, and they start putting work in.
Well, I think that the biggest challenge for him is adapting from a guy who was a position coach and doing all the minutiae and the grunt work to now being an administrator, because that's what he is as the head coach of the football team. So I don't think that it's going to change him as a person. I mean, my goodness, he called your show yesterday unsolicited. So I don't think he changes as a person, which is great, because we have seen that with so many coaches that have come through here, that building has just this very negative effect on people in which it changes who they are. as coaches or as executives. So the good news there is I don't think it'll affect Freddie in that regard, but the job changes. It's a lot different from even an 8-week stint calling plays. He will be and find himself in a much different spot this coming year as the head coach, because he's in charge. If a player gets in trouble on defense, well, he's the head coach. He's the one that has to, deal with something like that. So how does he handle that? I'm curious to hear how he handles a tough loss or a blowout loss or something negative that might hit the team, because he is a naturally optimistic person. So there's a lot of curiosity on my part to watch and observe how he handles some of these situations that he will now have to deal with.
What do you think, as you've been covering the Browns for 20 years, brother, what do you think are some of the mistakes that a couple of guys previously made that you would like to see him not make? And know that you have, because you can fall into pitfalls as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns if you were to go down those paths.
The power hungriness, changing, trying to be somebody that you're not, trying to emulate somebody that you're not. I think that those are the two biggest things that have led to the deterioration of relationships, and then which then lead to people getting fired. I think Eric Mangini would have been a hell of a coach here if he would have subjugated his ego enough to where he would have brought in a legitimate personnel guy and allowed them to pick the football talent instead of him wanting to have control of everything and drafting guys like Kaluka Mayava, David Vicuni, and Brian Rubisky. So, the power struggles and things like that. And I think that, John Dorsey looked at Freddie in those regards too, and he looked at the building, and Dorsey realized it. And that's the tone that he struck Monday at his introductory press conference when he talked about relationships and really knowing your players and a teamwork and I wrote a story about it, that the winning in football goes beyond just X's and O's. Yes, you have to know X's and O's to be a successful head coach, no question about it. And you got to know clock management and that, but the successful organizations understand the little things behind the scenes, that understand that everybody in the building's important. The guy that's cleaning up the locker room is just as important to the organization as the head coach is. And having that type of attitude, I really think, sets the Cleveland Browns and Freddie Kitchens up for the opportunity to finally have some success.
Daryl, there were some questions about how this staff would come together, as Freddie, had never even been an offensive coordinator before, but here he is having to kind of go through the staff. Obviously, John Dorsey was a big help in all of that. On the defensive side of the ball, did they get an upgrade from Greg Williams with their hire?
With Wilkes, I think that there's an opportunity for them to get an upgrade on that side of the ball. I think that they're going to get an upgrade this offseason in personnel, Anthony. I think that was a mitigating factor last year in some of the defensive rankings, and I'm not trying to make excuses, but that was a reality. They dealt with a lot of injuries, and especially on the defensive side of the ball, and while John Dorsey did a great job addressing a lot of the needs in the starting ranks on the team, he just didn't have enough time, really, to address the depth on the football team. And so I look for him to address maybe two or three starting positions, and then you just go to town on your depth on the defensive side of the ball. And maybe you replace a guy or two that you maybe didn't feel like you got the most bang for your buck or a premium effort for. So I think that Wilkes is going to be better positioned to have success because he's going to have a deeper roster to play with.
And then what about offensively with Monken coming in? Obviously, he's not going to call the plays. That's going to be Freddie's thing. But what is your takeaway about that setup right now?
I'm surprised they got him. And I think, to a lesser degree, the Browns and Freddie Kitchens are surprised that they got him as well, because he did have opportunities to go elsewhere. Not only the fact, Anthony, that he's not calling plays, not even going to run his own offense here. He's coming in and learning the Cleveland Browns offense that got installed. And I think that is so huge for this football team. Also, with the fact that they're going to keep that 4-3 base on defense, and granted, they only run that a small percentage of the time with all the packages and substitutions that are made, but they don't have to blow up the personnel on the defensive side of the ball. So offensively, by keeping the same scheme, the same terminology, et cetera, you can now take steps forward within those systems and within those personnel groupings so that you can build upon what you did last year rather than having to wipe the slate clean, forget everything you learned, hit the reset button, start from scratch like we see time and time again every time the Browns flip coaches. And, you know, I remember talking to players in the locker room. They always say it always felt like we were in kindergarten and our opposition was in grad school, because here we are in the first year of our system for the second time in 3 years or whatever, and then our opposition, they've had the same system for 5 to 10 years, and they just constantly every year they just build upon it. They're not having to spend their OTAs and off-season programs learning new vocabulary and new plays and all those type of things. So I think that keeping the 4-3 base defense and keeping the offensive system and having Monken come in here and learn it, I think that those are tremendous, tremendous strides forward for this organization.
It was reported yesterday that Gerald McCoy at Tampa Bay, he could get released coming up here very shortly. He'll be 31 coming up in February. I'd love to have him. I think that probably a lot of people would like to have him. Is there anything you're leery on? Would you like to take a swing at a guy like Gerald McCoy?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly wouldn't hurt to take a look at him. I would assume.
Next question. Okay, that's good. Next question, because I just want to ask it real quick. Because I think guys like Gerald McCoy, they've been brought up in the past, big names, people that we love, but what we've been burned by the money in the past, especially with some of the wide receivers. We've been burned by the money in the past also. But yeah, guys like Tony Jefferson, who wouldn't come here and says, I'm not interested in not winning at all either. How much easier now is it going to be? How interested are you in how easy it's going to be, or hopefully will be, to grease the palms of some of these free agents to come play for a football team, make some money, and also maybe compete for something here?
Well, yeah, and the Cleveland Browns are no longer a place you come just to collect a paycheck, and I think that that's ultimately what's important, Ken. You know, he did have six sacks last year.
Yep.
I think it's if he's willing to come here and work, I don't know that I would make a massive financial commitment to him or a long-term commitment to him. If it's a short-term, big-money commitment, fine. You got all the salary cap in the world to burn. Sure, it'd be worth taking a look at a guy like that. I would absolutely be in favor of a move like that. But the Cleveland Browns are no longer a paycheck destination for players. This is a place now, if you want to win in the National Football League, you should want to come here.
Darryl Ryder joining us on the hotline. We were talking about Jarvis Landry getting into the Pro Bowl because of DeAndre Hopkins' injury. And I asked Ken the question, Jarvis Landry, you'd have to say, was worth the haul, right? Worth the trade and worth the money. And B, do they need a player? Do they need a wide receiver better than Jarvis Landry?
Not so much better, but with just a different skill set. Jarvis Landry, and I've said it, I maintain it, and it's nothing against him. He is a quintessential number two wide receiver in an offense. Unfortunately, when you were in the position the Browns were in, you have to pay him like he is a number one. And that there's nothing wrong with what the Browns did. Okay, but I do believe he is a firm number two guy, because he's not someone that you send deep down the field all the time to blow the top off the back end of the defense and those type of things. So it was a great trade for the Browns. You gave up a fourth and a seventh for him, and he ended up leading your team in receptions. He ended up leading your team in receiving yardage. And now he keeps his Pro Bowl streak alive. So all in all, it was a great trade for the Cleveland Browns. They gave up virtually next to nothing for a Pro Bowl caliber player who went out there and did his job by leading your football team in the top two categories at his position.
We know you probably just got up, so I'll tell you this right now, and then I'll let you go. I'll ask you a question, then we'll let you go. Kyrie, after Boston's win last night over Toronto, he told the media that he called LeBron and apologized to LeBron. Okay, so you know about that, and Kevin Love was actually with LeBron when the call was made. Do you think that he owes Cleveland an apology now?
Yes, because it was his crappy attitude that led to his departure, which then led to LeBron leaving. So, you know, Kyrie's the base. It the fall of the Cavaliers starts with Kyrie Irving. And, you know, covering Kyrie Irving, he was probably one of the most miserable athletes that I ever covered. He was never in a good mood when he talked to us. He always was pouting. It was a rare occasion when you actually looked at the practice floor and he was out there smiling, laughing, and having a good time with his teammates. I remember the one dancing video that, like, went viral or whatever that he did. There was a dancing challenge or something, and he ended up doing it and went viral, and that was fun. But Kyrie Irving was not a happy person here in Cleveland, and I don't know if it was because he was in Cleveland or just he was an unhappy person or just young and immature. I mean, I know when I was young, I had a lot of anger to me. I was personally unhappy, and you know what? I tweeted last night, good for him personally that he maybe realized that, and good for him to pick up a phone and call LeBron, because LeBron came here trying to help Kyrie Irving stack rings. And unfortunately, Kyrie's attitude got in the way of it. He wasn't able to see what LeBron James was trying to get out of him and everybody else. And again, it led to the fall of the Cavaliers, because I think it was The Athletic that wrote it, that once that LeBron admitted once Kyrie Irving was traded, that ultimately was the beginning of the end for him in Cleveland, his second stint around. So, yeah, I think to a lesser degree, Kyrie Irving owes Cavalier fans a little bit of an apology, too, because he had a lot of growing up to do, even when LeBron was here, and LeBron always did everything he could to try and teach Kyrie how to grow up.
A strong answer, and I'm happy I asked it. Thank you very much, Daryl. We will be using that later when we get into it coming up at around 8:03, my friend. All the very best to you.
You're very welcome, and tell Freddie I said good luck.
I will promise to do that. Thank you very much, Daryl.
You got it, guys.
The great Daryl Ryder on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. That was a surprising answer, but no love lost between the dangerous one, Daryl Ryder, and Kyrie Irving.